Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
During a dark and desolate winter over, British behavioural scientist Drew Fairfield has been found murdered. Your job is to solve the crime. To do this, you need to immerse yourself in the victim's diaries, interviews, and secret recordings alongside DCI Tessa McAllister, as she leads the investigation to uncover the truth about Drew's death. There are only 16 people left on the base, and the murderer must be one of them. Establish motive, opportunity, and alibi for each of the suspects, and figure out who killed Drew. Head to coldtapes.com, where you can sign up and charge your suspect. Correctly identify the murderer, and you'll be entered into a draw to win the prestigious title of Super Sleuth of the Year at CrimeCon London and a £10,000 reward. Over 18s and residents of Great Britain only. T's and C's apply.
Hey, freaky friends! It's Michelle and Melissa from the Freaky Fridays podcast. We are sisters in separate states and love to talk about all kinds of spooky, freaky, and scary shit while drinking and laughing through our fear.
Join us Fridays as we delve into everything from the world of the paranormal to scary movies to creepy stuff we find around the internet. Subscribe to Freaky Fridays wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Sleep tight.
Make sure you leave the lights on.
Freaky Fridays is a proud member of the Podmoth Network. For more awesome pods, check out podmoth.network.
Welcome to the Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy podcast. I'm Declan, the son.
And I'm Jane, the mom. This is the podcast where we talk about brutal crimes, bizarre occurrences, and get you drunk with cocktails themed around one of our stories. To lighten things up, we'd like to end our time with a chaser. Please keep in mind some of our stories might be upsetting to young or sensitive ears.
We love hearing from our listeners, so feel free to contact us by email or social media. You can find our contact info in the show notes for this episode. If you'd like to support us through Patreon, you can find us there at Brutal, Bizarre, and Boozy Podcast, or use the link in our show notes.
Thanks for hanging out with us once again, everybody. Good to see
you,
Mom.
Yes, hi, friends.
What story do you have for us today?
I am going to be talking about polygraphs. So it's not a specific story. I've got a couple of stories, but the theme of it is all about polygraphs.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. What story have you got for us?
I am going to be talking about Brian Wells, and that name might not sound familiar right now, but I think a lot of us have heard this story before or saw the documentary about it.
Oh, there's a doc. Fun.
And to go with this story, I have the collar and cuff cocktail, and I think this one's going to be either really good or really bad.
Yeah, it's...
So,
I don't know.
The ingredients are 2 bar spoons of honey, 1 ounce of scotch whiskey, but I use bourbon because scotch is gross, 1 ounce of ginger liqueur, 1 ounce of lemon juice, and top up with boiling water.
The boiling water honey is throwing me.
It seems like they would drink this when you had the flu in the 40s.
100%. You are correct. It's like,
yeah.
Yes.
Lemon juice, honey, hot water, some whiskey.
Yep.
It's like.
And some whiskey. Yep. Mucinex. Some scotch.
Yes.
Okay.
So place bar spoon in glass, add ingredients, and stir, then top with hot water. So let's give this a try.
Okay.
It does taste medicinal.
It does. I think because of the ginger.
Yeah, and I like ginger. It's got like the spice from the ginger and the whiskey, but kind of like, I think I kind of like this. I could see drinking this on like, if you got a little like throat cold or something.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see me.
It's interesting.
I want this
for sure.
to be a cold drink. I don't want this to be a hot drink.
I think if you look at it in the terms of medicinal, I like
yes.
it. But like, it's not like you would go and get this at a bar. Like,
no.
It's just nothing you'd drink.
I
drink this maybe once a month.
I feel like I don't like the feeling of hot alcohol. The fumes of the hot alcohol in my mouth and in my throat.
The
ethanol I don't like
vapors
that feeling.
Are stronger.
Yes, I don't yeah. like the vapors. I'm all about not having the vapors.
I think it's okay for what it is. And it goes so well with this story, but...
Yeah.
So I will be talking about one of the strangest series of crimes the FBI has ever investigated.
Really?
Yes, and they claim this on their website. So,
okay.
This story sounds like a fucking movie. Like,
oh.
When I read this or wrote this script, I was like, if they haven't made this into a movie yet, they should. Because there's a documentary on it, but it's like
okay.
just like a... Brian's grandmother's dog sitter,
right.
like, interview.
One of
like,
those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Brian Wells was born and raised in Erie, Pennsylvania on November 15th, 1956, and was one of six children in the Wells family.
That's a lot of kids.
At 16, he dropped out of school to become a mechanic, but in his mid-30s was fired and decided to become a pizza delivery driver at a restaurant called Mama Mia's Pizzeria.
Oh. Okay. I'm just going to leave that right
That's
there.
That's a very Midwest-sounding pizza name.
Yep,
but
I'm going to leave it right there.
At around 1:30 p.m. on August 28, 2003, the pizza shop received a call asking for two pizzas to be delivered to 8631 Peach Street in Erie, Pennsylvania. This was the location of a transmitting tower for a local TV network. Weeks before this, Brian, Kenneth Barnes, Marjorie Dill Armstrong, and William Rothstein were reportedly planning a get-rich-quick scheme. The scheme was to put a fake bomb around Brian's neck and have him rob a bank to get enough money to pay Barnes $250,000 to kill Marjorie's father to receive her inheritance.
Wow.
Yes. So
all, right.
all kinds of complications that could go with this story.
Oof.
So when Brian arrived to deliver the pizza, he met his fellow conspirators and a new face, a man named Floyd Stockton. Floyd sat Brian down and attached a collar that was essentially a large handcuff. So it worked the exact same. It had like a ratcheting system, looked exactly like a handcuff.
Okay.
The handcuff consisted of four keyholes to unlock the collar, two kitchen timers, a hanging digital timer, and two pipe bombs, live bombs. These were not fake bombs.
Shit.
Yes.
Ooh.
When Brian was informed of the explosives attached to his neck, he became irate and was settled by a gunshot fired in the air by Floyd. So the plan initially was that the bombs were going to be fake. And
okay.
They changed the plan last minute without telling Brian that these were real bombs.
That's not nice.
No, not nice at all.
Don't do that, people. That's shitty.
Brian was given a crude, homemade shotgun, a list of tasks, and told that his every move was being surveilled, and told that, if questioned, that three black men had done this to him.
Oh,
so
that's not nice either.
Yeah. The task consisted of a scavenger hunt.
Oh.
Yeah, that's really what I want to be doing with a bomb strapped to my fucking neck.
Okay. Don't put bombs around your neck and make people do scavenger hunts. That's
it's like this sounds like a Saw movie.
Yeah. It does. This is insane.
So here's a copy made of the instructions found in Brian's car. This is all verbatim.
Okay.
You are to go to PNC Bank at Summit Town Center on Peach Street. Quietly give the following demands note to a receptionist or bank teller. Do not cause alarm. Get required money and deliver to a specified location by following notes that you will collect as you race against time. Each note leads to the next note and key until finished. You will collect several keys in a combination to remove the bomb. After police won't charge you because you were a hostage.
Okay.
Most important rule, do not radio, phone, or contact anyone. Alerting authorities, your company, or anyone will bring your death. If we spot police vehicles or aircrafts, you will be killed. This powerful booby trap bomb can be removed only by following our directions. Using time, attempting to escape it will fail. It will fail and leave you short of time to follow instructions. Do not delay. You have less than minutes until detonation. Send no more than minutes in the bank. You will need blank minutes travel time. You have safety margin less than blank minutes. You use all remaining time to retrieve and obey our instructions. You will gain additional time by finding the first of several keys. As you follow our instructions, you will be given all keys and combinations after the money is received and safely counted. We will leave keys and combinations as you progress.
If you
delay, disobey, or alert anyone, you will die. It is your choice to live or bring death. If you do not obey and leave the bank without money, you will die. So will others. Stay calm and do as instructed to survive. We're following your moves in cars to make sure you obey. Sentries are driving and looking out for authority. We are scanning police radio frequencies and cell phone calls. If police or aircraft are involved, you will be destroyed. Alerting authorities or anyone else will prevent you from completing the mission. Go to the bank and quietly enter with the weapon we gave you. Given the demands to the receptionist or manager, avoid panicking the tellers or customers. Use weapons if anyone does not cooperate or attempts to leave the bank. Weapon instructions are near the trigger, since this was a homemade gun. He had to learn how to use it.
This is crazy. You must deliver. Town.
Yeah, and you must deliver money alone. You must return all weapons, notes to us. Return to the bank and police after we release you to safety. Act now, think later, or you will die. That was the whole note.
That's, first of all, a very long note.
Yes, and it repeats itself multiple times.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could have made that a little shorter, but...
This is Cocoa Puffs, man.
So his first task was go to the PNC Bank and rob them for $250,000, leave his driver license, and promise to return later.
What?
I don't know why, but... After robbing the bank, his next order was to go to a nearby McDonald's, find a rock near the McDonald's sign to retrieve a note that was taped underneath the rock with orange tape. This was his next set of instructions. He was then instructed to leave the McDonald's drive-thru and tie some orange tape to a nearby fire hydrant to signal that he had left the bank with the money. He was then ordered to travel along the highway to receive his next instructions. About 15 minutes after Brian left the bank, he was spotted by police in the McDonald's parking lot. Police arrested him around 2:50, and he claimed that three black men had attacked him and given him instructions as well as attached the bomb to his neck, as he was instructed.
Okay, right. He blamed it on somebody else, made up a story.
So bomb squad was called at 3:04, and about 15 minutes after the bomb squad, after calling the bomb squad, Brian's neck detonated, killing him instantly. 3 minutes later, the bomb squad arrived. So,
geez.
A tad bit late.
Wow.
About a month later, Marjorie was arrested after William called police and told them about a man in his freezer.
What?
So they had no real leads on this until... we'll get there.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
Apparently Marjorie's boyfriend, who lived near where the pizza delivered, was killed by her because he knew of her involvements in the robbery.
Of course. I mean, you have to... No witnesses. Leave no witnesses. Come on.
Yeah. Marjorie shot him with a shotgun and apparently gave William $2,000 to help her hide the body. And William said, I'm sick of this guy in my...
Yeah,
my standalone freezer. I need to put these briskets somewhere.
That's effed up, man. Holy moly.
She was arrested and given 7 to 10 years in prison for that murder. And in 2005, while in prison, tried to get sent to a better prison by offering information about Brian's murder.
Okay.
So she thought squealing on herself would get her into a better prison.
And how did that go for her?
She admitted to planning and providing supplies to William, who she implicated as the mastermind. However, William died from cancer in 2004. So they couldn't question him about it. Barnes was implicated in 2008 by his brother-in-law, who Barnes admitted his crime to. Again, people, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. Stop telling people stuff. It's called a secret for a reason.
He was sentenced to 45 years for conspiracy to rob a bank and aiding and abetting, but had it reduced to 22.5 years. Okay. Marjorie was sent to a mental health facility in 2008 and stayed there until she was allowed to return to normal prison, where she stood trial for the bombing.
Good.
In 2010, she was convicted of armed bank robbery, conspiracy to commit bank robbery, and using a destructive device in the use of a crime, and was sentenced to life in prison.
Jeez.
Yes. Very bizarre murder.
It's so convoluted.
Yeah, the fact that he was planning it with a fake bomb and they tricked him and just put a real bomb around his neck is evil.
Why? Why did they do that?
I guess get rid of the witness if they can't track down the money. Like, Brian isn't there to say, hey, these guys are involved too.
Right.
Because his head is exploded.
Is this the one where it was... It was accidentally shown on live news coverage?
No, because I don't remember the exact reason, but there was like an issue with the news and they weren't able to get it on camera. The only footage I've seen is like body cam footage, I believe.
Oh, okay. Well, then there's another one that I'm thinking of where they accidentally showed it. I thought it was this one, but... There are so many messed up stories
out
there.
Pretty sure I read that they didn't get it because of like traffic or something, I want to say. That's kind of why there was the issue with the bomb squad getting there so late is because of how bad the traffic was. The ATF released a whole statement. It's like
goodness.
Their response time was normal due to the amount of traffic that was there.
That's just...
But yeah.
It's such a complex plan. Why have such a complex plan? I don't get it.
Okay, so the event was broadcast on live air, but did not show the moment of detonation due to a technical problem. So they got everything. I'm sure there was some deleted footage.
Or I was going to say, or has that been like scrubbed and now everybody's going, no, it was not shown.
We didn't get that. Meanwhile, yeah. It's being put on live leak or some shit.
Right. Eeks.
Yeah.
That's terrifying. I just don't understand why to make things so complicated. If you're going to steal some money.
I don't.
Why?
They must have wanted to kill him. Like, making him do a scavenger hunt and shit. Like, that's so stupid.
It's weird.
Yeah. It sounds like a fucking movie, doesn't it?
It does.
It's so weird.
It does. this poor guy is thinking he's all fine and good and
46-year-old pizza delivery driver, like,
right. I just, wow. I don't
feel
understand
like
people.
It'd have to be a really large bank too. Most bank robberies don't get anywhere near $250,000.
Right. Yeah, that's weird. Like, that's a high dollar. Maybe, I mean, big metropolitan city, maybe. Maybe they have that.
Is Erie a, let's see. I've got it.
Oh no, I think it's a pretty big city.
Population of 270,000 in 2020.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
It's pretty big. Yeah. Okay.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Why did she end up in a mental facility for a while?
I didn't see why. I think she was just a crazy lady.
They were probably like, anybody that went to this much
yeah.
bizarre planning for a simple robbery, something's wrong up there. There's Cocoa Puffs rolling around, I guess. I don't know.
She had also killed another boyfriend before, but was acquitted due to like lack of evidence. So this lady was...
She is...
crazy.
Is she pretty? Or...
I've never even seen a picture of her. Let's
see. Was she like terrifyingly... just really good at finding people to manipulate? I'm guessing she's not pretty.
Oh, she... No, she is not. She looked like a lunch lady.
Okay.
Sorry to any lunch ladies. I didn't mean any offense by that. But
yeah, no offense to lunch ladies.
She looks like she killed a couple people, that's for sure.
Well, I'm glad she's in prison now for the rest.
She has no eyebrows.
Ever. She has drawn on eyebrows?
She has no eyebrows at all.
Oh.
That's why she looks so weird. Yeah, she looks like
a
fucking alien.
Wonder if she, like, plucked him out.
Maybe.
Or maybe she has alopecia. Where your
hair
just... yeah.
Just no eyebrows. I don't know. She's creepy looking.
Maybe she's got something against eyebrows.
She has eyebrows when she was younger. I don't know what happened to them.
Who knows?
They show, like, her... a younger picture of her. It looks like a yearbook or something, but she has eyebrows in that picture, but not in her mugshot.
Some women are opposed to having actual natural eyebrows and want to draw
them tattooed
on
and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know. That's way too much work for
me. Yeah.
Yikes. Okay, are you ready for my...
your polygons?
History story and then some sad stuff that goes with it. Not entirely sad, but...
huh. That sounds interesting already.
Yes. So we're talking about polygraph tests, otherwise known as the lie detector.
Not polygons.
Polygraphs. Fine. Polly, you got the first part, right? The poly with a G. Yeah, polygraphs.
Yeah.
Line. We're all talking about that. And of course, it comes second nature to some people, especially when telling the truth could land you in a load of trouble, like going to prison for putting on a fake bomb collar that's actually real.
Yeah. God, that fucking story. I just can't get over it. It's so weird.
I know. It's wild. It's so... I don't get why it was so complicated.
I don't get why this isn't, like, all over the news. Like, he didn't get his own day for this. Like, that's such a weird... Okay,
right.
Anyway, we're on
that's
your story
bizarre.
Now.
So, lying, as we are talking about, it's very common for someone accused of a crime to deny that they've done anything wrong. After all, the first rule of life is deny. And the second rule is keep your damn mouth shut. But going back for centuries, those in power wanted to determine if someone was lying. Our current method is commonly called the lie detector test, or the polygraph machine, at its more the scientific name of it. The basic premise of the polygraph is that lying will cause a physiological response in the body. By measuring specific markers, it is believed that the test can demonstrate when someone is not telling the truth. One of the original methods for measuring these body responses came from a physiologist, Angelo Musso, in Italy. In 1878, he invented the plethysmograph, which is an instrument used to measure changes in blood pressure based on stimuli. Just a few years later, in 1892, Sir James Mackenzie, a medical doctor, created the first graphing machine that measured vascular pulse and charted it on paper.
Kind of like an EKG almost.
Yes. Like a, kind of like that.
A paper yep. EKG.
Yeah. It would allow it to be graphed rather than just like read on the screen or whatever, you know, using like a pen or a pencil or whatever.
Like a seismograph almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Or like you said, an EKG.
Yeah.
3 years later, Cesare Lombroso, probably destroyed that name. He was
Cesare.
Living
Cesare. Is it not Caesar?
Well, it's weird because it's spelled C-E-S-A-R-E. So I don't know. Because Caesar is not spelled that way. Similar letters, but different order. So I don't know. Could be Caesar. Hell if I know. But this guy modified a different instrument to measure the blood pressure and pulse of the subject being questioned by the police. So they're kind of adding things each time where it just used to be blood pressure and now they're going to monitor the pulse. Lombroso was an Italian doctor, psychiatrist, and criminologist. Then in 1915, American psychologist and attorney Dr. Marston developed the technique of using a standard blood pressure cuff and a stethoscope to intermittently monitor a suspect's blood pressure to detect lying. So they would just sit there and take your blood pressure and ask you questions and then just randomly like, oh, I'm going to take your blood pressure and see how it's changed. They weren't graphing it at this time, but they were just
Does blood
randomly.
Pressure really change that much? Like,
it can.
I thought it was just one reading. Can it be higher?
You
2 seconds later than
yes.
Oh, okay.
I have taken mine, waited 5 minutes, and taken it again, and it's different.
Interesting.
That's normal. So there's a little bit of variability. I think they're looking at fluctuation. Like, oh, was it a wild change? Like 10 points on the milligram of mercury scale, or was it just like one or two? One or two is fairly normal, but 10 to 15.
Mercury. What?
That's what it's called, blood pressure.
I thought mercury was bad for us.
It's like the scale, that's what it's called.
It's just what it's called.
Once upon a time, I guess that's how they measured it, but now it's different. I don't even know. So the full continuous charting of blood pressure, pulse, and breathing started in 1921 when John Larson invented a machine that he called the polygraph. The first use occurred in Berkeley, California, and it was used during the 1920s. But in 1923, the testing as a whole was deemed inadmissible in court due to a lack of general acceptance of the procedure. This precedent was set by the case Fry versus the United States. Basically, they said nobody really buys that this is truth, that this is a factual representation of a lie and truth detector, so we're not going to allow it in courts. That was back in the 20s.
I would be nervous just getting a polygraph, even if I was telling the truth. I'm sure my numbers would be everywhere.
100%.
Like, other people react differently to that kind of interrogation. Like,
Yeah. If somebody asked me, no. We're going to talk about that later.
Yeah.
That case, Fry versus United States, involved James Fry, who had been convicted of second-degree murder. The defense wanted to introduce the systolic blood pressure monitoring test to show that he was not lying during his testimony. But the court wouldn't allow the test because at the time, it was not generally accepted by the scientific community as a trustworthy test. Larson's machine was modified by Leonard Keeler in 1925 and later patented as the Keeler polygraph, giving him the moniker, the father of the polygraph. Which, I guess just because he patented it, but he took somebody else's and changed it a little bit, and now they're like, oh, you're the one that invented it, but he really wasn't the one that invented it.
That's
whatever.
Every crazy invention is like that. Light bulb, true. Phonograph.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We're all stolen by other people.
Yep. Polygraph results were used for the first criminal trial in Wisconsin in 1935. The case was an attempted murder trial in which the defendants, Tony Grignano and Cecil Loniello, were accused of the attempted murder of a police officer that occurred during a robbery. Both of the defendants and the prosecution mutually agreed to the administration of the polygraph, and then they would also allow the expert testimony by Keeler as to the results of the test. Basically, the defendants failed the test, and they were convicted. They were sentenced. Grignano was sentenced to 1 to 6 years, and Loniello received a 1 to 8 year sentence. So that was the first big use of it. Because I guess they figured, well, it's been a decade, so now the scientific community believes it. I don't know. Between the 1930s and the 1980s, not much changed with the polygraph. Then in 1993, statisticians at Johns Hopkins University developed a software program using mathematical algorithms to evaluate responses seen on the machine. This was done to further aid in the interpretation of the results, which can be one of the biggest problems. If the test is administered by someone with little knowledge or experience, the interpretation might be faulty, causing false positives or false negatives. Because you have to know, oh, this change indicates a lie, not just that they were nervous. But then knowing when that change occurred also affects whether or not they deem it to be a truth or a lie. So when they ask him a question, there's a level of interpretation of, oh, there was a change in their readings before they answered, and therefore it was a lie, or there was no change and therefore it was the truth, or it happened after they answered. So I don't know, but there's, in order to use the test in court, you have to be certified and you have to have so many hours of experience of using the machine. And so it's not just up to anybody to come in and go, I know how to do this test and you're lying. It has to be somebody who's
done it. Thought it was admissible in court.
Well, actually, currently half of the states in the U.S. will allow polygraph results to be used in court.
Thanks.
And
that's so sketchy.
Some of them only allow it on a limited basis. Some states also require that both the defendant and the prosecution must agree on the use of the test before it can be entered into evidence.
Okay. Both sides have to be. So prosecutor has to be thinking, oh, you did this, and the polygraph is going to say you're lying.
Right.
And the defense is like, well, he's innocent. Polygraph is going to prove his innocence. Okay.
Yes.
That's more fair, so, I feel.
They both have to agree. And that's basically what happened in 1935 with that first case. those guys that were accused of the attempted murder. They were like, no, we're going to take a test. And the prosecution was like, okay, go for it. And then they ended up failing and went to prison anyway. So I guess if you're going to agree to it, make sure that you pass the damn thing. Yeah.
That's, again, if you're nervous, then that's going to throw the results off, I'm sure. And,
I would think so. Yes, I would. That's what I would be worried about.
I mean, it's often used. It seems like it's often used when your life is on the line. Like, you either go to prison or you're free. So there's a lot of stakes on it. You'd be nervous, obviously. That would throw the readings off. Now that I'm thinking about it, it just shouldn't be used at all.
I would be terrified. Even though its use in court may be questionable, it is a tool often used by law enforcement when investigating cases. It's also used a lot of times for employment purposes. So some some jobs.
For the CIA, they want you to be.
The FBI.
Do you know if the questions have to be binary, like yes or no questions?
Yes, they do.
So I feel like that could also be a potential issue, because it's like, if the story is at all complicated, the yes or no isn't really going to fall under certain circumstances. So
yes,
that could be another way to sway it, I feel.
I knew someone who was trying to get a job with the FBI, and she had to have a polygraph in part of her like job seeking effort. They gave her a polygraph, and one of the questions they specifically told her, do not tell anyone about your job application with us. Don't talk to anybody that we're having, you know, an interview with you. You can't tell anybody anything. Keep your mouth shut. So they gave her the polygraph and they asked her, did you tell anyone? And she said, yes. Well, she told her spouse, because she's like, I have to go to another city to have a meeting, and you have to take care of our children. She's like, how was I going to explain that I was going to another town for a couple of days?
Reason. Yeah.
And not have him wonder what the hell I was doing.
Binary questions are just a horrible way to like interrogate someone. So
yes or no. It's so bizarre. Like, did you do this? Well, no, you can't say well. It's yes or no. I don't know. Yeah,
that question is like, oh, I could have told Osama bin Laden, or I could have told my husband. Like, what does yes mean?
Right. Yeah. And it was like a big deal. They were like, you weren't supposed to tell anyone. She's like, well, I had to get here.
Yeah.
So
dumb.
There have been some cases where polygraph results affected the outcome of the trial. A couple of the cases were ones that we have covered in previous episodes. In episode 19, we covered Gary Ridgway, also known as the Green River Killer.
Yes.
At the time he was given his polygraph, he was suspected of 4 women's murders. He passed his test, and so they dropped him as a suspect. Ridgway went on to kill at least 44 more women after that. All
stupid.
Because he passed that damn test. And
he's probably so dumb he didn't know that.
Or he's just a psychopath.
Throwing darts at a board.
Right. I don't know.
He had, a 75 IQ?
It was,
lukewarm.
Not great.
Yeah.
In episode 38, we discussed Alex Murdoch and the murder of his son and wife. If you remember from that case, Murdoch was convicted of killing his son and wife, but he had a boatload of other crimes that he was being investigated for, including over 100 counts of financial crimes and fraud. We briefly discussed those fraud and money laundering crimes, but at the time that we covered the case, which was a long time ago because it was episode 38, it was almost 100 episodes ago, we didn't have any resolution on those fraud cases and those charges. But several months after he'd been convicted of murder, he pleaded guilty to money laundering charges in which he had laundered more than $7 million. So much Jesus. Money. The agreement stipulated that Murdoch would cooperate with investigations and that he be truthful. But if it was determined that he was lying, then the plea agreement would be voided. In exchange for the plea, the federal government would allow Murdoch to serve his federal fraud case, the conviction of that, his sentence for that could be served at the same time as his state fraud case. So he's serving these two sentences concurrently, regardless of his murder conviction. Murdoch failed a polygraph in October of 2023, so the federal prosecutors have requested the court vacate the plea agreement, which would allow the feds to force Murdoch to serve his federal sentence separately from the state one, which would mean he's in jail a little longer. So
that's rough.
Another example of polygraphs gone wrong, but on a very serious and tragic side, is the case involving Frank Sterling. Frank Sterling was convicted in 1992 of a murder that occurred in 1988. The victim was 74-year-old Viola Manville from Rochester, New York. She had been taking a walk near on a walking track that was near abandoned railroad tracks. She had been shot in the head twice with a BB gun, struck by a railroad tie, and beaten to death.
Jesus Christ.
Yes. She's 74. My God.
Shoot her with a BB gun. That's just crazy.
I know. It's so twisted. Her body was dragged from the path and left in the nearby bushes, with several pieces of her clothing being moved to expose her. Viola had previously reported a sexual assault that had been committed by Frank's older brother. Police believed that this was Frank's motive for the murder. However, Frank had a ironclad, full-on alibi for the time of the murder. It was corroborated by multiple people that said, yes, we saw him. He was here this time to this time. It wasn't him. For nearly 3 years, the case went dormant with no other leads. It was reopened in 1991, and police were still interested in Frank, even though he had a solid alibi. They still were like, no, we think he did it. So they picked him up for questioning after he had been on a 36-hour truck driving job. So I don't know if he was awake for that full 36 hours, because I think that's against the law, but nevertheless, he was pretty tired, apparently.
It might have been through
back in the 90s
era.
Yeah, back in the 90s, they were like, you don't need to sleep. You're fine. Yeah, take some speed.
Give it some crank.
Yeah, it's good. Through several hours of interrogation, officers insisted that he was guilty, telling him he would feel better if he confessed. They showed him photos of the crime scene, and they gave him details of the crime. So they're like, feeding him information. This is how you did it, right? Look at the picture of the crime scene. They even tried hypnosis, and they were rubbing his back while they were like, you should really confess. It'll be fine. After more than 8 hours in this interview, Frank admitted to the crime, but shortly thereafter recanted. Frank was given a polygraph, which, what do you think he did? Did he pass it or fail it?
He failed.
He failed. The false confession and the failed polygraph led to his conviction. But thankfully, that's not the end of this story. The real killer, Mark Christie, had also been on police's radar at the beginning of the case, but he gave the police a false alibi and he passed a polygraph. So they were like, nope, can't be him.
Can't be him.
Years later, Christie was convicted of kidnapping and murdering a 4-year-old child.
Jesus Christ. Oh my
God. Yeah. Frank's attorneys later learned that Christie had been confessing to friends that he'd gotten away with Viola's murder. He's, again, keep your damn mouth shut. He was flapping his lips to everybody who would listen. But they didn't think that was enough information to warrant a new trial for Frank. So in 2006, they took samples of Viola's clothing and they tested it for touch DNA. Frank's DNA was nowhere to be found. So it basically eliminated him as a suspect, but it did implicate Christie further. In 2010, Christie fully confessed to Viola's murder from 1988, and Frank was freed. He spent 18 years in prison for that shit.
And they give him some stupid restitution of like $100,000. It's like, yeah, okay.
Insane. I know that there are tons and tons more cases, and these were just a few of them. But, and I think we kind of already covered this, but personal thoughts on using polygraphs. My vote is don't do it.
Don't think they should use it. Yeah, no.
One of the sources that I found was an actual a company that does them, and it was talking about like, no, it could really save your bacon. And it gave a few examples of like people that had been accused of something and they did the polygraph and it never proceeded to like further problems. But like you said, I would be so nervous that I would fail it. That I would probably actually fucking fail it because I would be so much anxiety.
If your freedom's on the line, that's a lot to lose. So you'd obviously be nervous and like freaking out. I would be at least.
Same. I have to fill out paperwork all the time. And I don't know if you've ever had to do this, but every year I have to renew my license, or my driver's license, my working license. And they ask questions. Have you had this happen? And I'm like, I always check no because I haven't committed a felony. But there's other times where I've like had to fill out other paperwork for other things. And it asks the question like, in the last 10 years, have you done this? And it's, I know I haven't done that, but I have a level of anxiety that I'm going to check the wrong box.
Yeah.
And then they're going to be like, well, you checked yes. And I'm like, no, I meant no, I really didn't. And they're like, sure. Every fucking time I fill out those questionnaires for that.
Tax season right now. And I always feel like I fill them out wrong. I don't.
Yes.
It's so scary.
It's terrifying.
If you fuck it up, you go to jail. Like,
I hate that shit. That. No, I have too much anxiety just in general life. Driving around, crossing the road. I don't think if you gave me a polygraph, if I was 100% honest, I would probably fail it just because I was wetting my pants.
Yeah.
No. Mm-mm.
All right. Do you have a chaser for us?
I do have a chaser. I have another watch recommendation because cold weather and all I do is sit inside and watch TV. This is a short series on Netflix that was recently came out called Zero Day with Robert De Niro. And it is about an electronic terrorist attack on the U.S., where
oh god, that's scary.
All of a sudden, for no without warning, all the electronics shut off for a full minute.
Oh, like revolt that
yes.
Only for a minute though.
Yes, but it's just 1 minute. And then everything comes back on. But there's thousands of people. Yes. Trains crashed into each other. Thousands of people die in this attack. And so Robert De Niro is a former president that is asked to come and sit on this committee to review what happened and who was the one who did the attack and where did it come from? And was it another country? Was it a, you know, terrorist group? It's really good. It's really good.
That sounds really good.
We binged it and then it brought up a lot of questions at the end. I'm not going to give a spoiler, but the ending is like, oh my, I don't know what I would do. I mean, I know what I would do, but I would also have a really hard time doing the right thing because of all of the circumstances. But it's a great show. I highly recommend it. So
sounds a lot like that. That Netflix. There was like a movie that came out like a year ago, maybe a year or two, where like there's a huge hack. And boats were crashing into the beaches, like planes were falling out of the sky.
Oh, yeah.
Did you guys watch that? I can't remember.
I think we did, but I don't remember the name of the show.
The deer started acting weird and like Tesla. Yeah. It kind of sounds a lot like that. I cannot remember the name of it for the life of me, but it was like really good.
I can't either. I remember the scene I remember from that is the ocean liner that like just beached itself.
Beaches. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. But when I was on the beach. Yeah. That's so
like
scary.
I can't even pick out like an actor that was in it to try and look up the IMDb. So I know that was also a good thing. Yeah. But I don't know.
This Julia one, there's Roberts also
there's me. Also a another part of it where they
leave the world behind. That's what the movie was
okay.
called.
In it's Zero kinda, Day, they also have like this terrifying technology that like the CIA developed and then abandoned. But like the gist of it was that it was a remote attack on somebody's brain and it would make you have hallucinations and.
Oh. Havana syndrome, basically.
Kind of, yes. Kind of,
oh,
but
interesting.
There's, you know, questions about is it being used? Was it who? It's anyway. It's a really good story, and it's only 6 episodes. It's a limited series, and it's like boom, done. So
I'm gonna have to check that out. This sounds right up my alley.
Yes, you will really like it. It's very conspiracy. Theory. I mean, it's perfect. All about conspiracies. So what's your chaser today?
My chaser is a listen recommendation for a podcast. And I'm sorry if I've talked about this already. I don't think we have.
I think you
and I talked about it, but not on here. Yeah. But it's called Story Wars. It's a podcast with Big J Okerson, who's also on The Bonfire, Love the Bonfire, and Luis J. Gomez. They're both from Eugenics Gangs, but I don't really listen to that much. But they get 3 guests in the comedy realm or actor realm, I think. I think they've had actors on. But anyways, everyone submits like 4 or 5 stories on a certain topic. And they are pulled from a hat and read by the host. And they all have to guess whose story it is. And if it's your story, you have to pretend it's not yours.
Oh.
So it's all like, oh, today we're talking about baby showers. And then everyone has I shit my pants at a baby shower. And then like, you get points if you guess. I think it's 2 points if you guess whose story it is. And 1 point for every person you trick if it's your story. And they're always competing over just like a random book. It's like, here's a bibliography of Tommy Lee Jones that we're the winner gets. And
that's so weird.
It's really fun just like listen to. It's a live podcast so you can hear the crowd and stuff, but it's not too obnoxious because I can get irritated by that, but
yeah,
it's really same. Fun. Just like everyone's kind of fucking around, making jokes, and
that's cool. I'm gonna have to check that out. Yeah.
For example, they're like Sal Vulcano from Impractical Jokers. He went on it, and the story was about like parenting. I think that was the theme, and his story was, ever since my child was born, I haven't left the house without a weapon. And he tricked everybody, got a bunch of points, and then he pulled out a taser from his sock.
Oh my. Yeah. Okay. Well.
Yeah.
I get it. Pretty funny. Being a parent is terrifying.
Yeah. Especially in New York City. I think that's where he lives. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Just in general, being a parent is terrifying, and it never goes away.
Yes. Well, I think that brings us to the end of today's episode. Got a nice healthy length on there.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching, hanging out, joining us, listening to us, everybody. Go ahead and share, hit the like, give us a follow, all the fun stuff. If you give us an Apple rating, we'll go ahead and read it live on the podcast. So
tell all your friends. Do all that
fun stuff for us.
Yes. Yes. We have a very extensive back catalog for people who are bingers like us.
Oh, yeah.
Where you just want to sit and listen. 134
other episodes. Yep.
Gosh. Go
check us out.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody. Love you, bud.
Love you too, Mom. Bye.
Bye. Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.